Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
Everybody, what's up? What's up? Welcome to Brother from Another on a Friday. Hope you got big weekend plans. We do too. We starting off the weekend right now. And Vinny, I don't know what the outfit suggests. You know, maybe like you're going to the concert with your boys, or you're going to the show. Hey man, it's like 3, 4, 5 deep. We all go wear this. Or maybe it's just a choir rehearsal. I don't know. But what happened? I love it, though. I love it, Vinny. I wonder if we're going to be in sync throughout the show based on the way we look today.
I was thinking. I was really, really close to putting on my D'Angelo Brown Sugar sweatshirt. I was this close. And then you know what I was like? I was like, I think I need to have on like a darker color today, just to signify that I'm just coming after you today. You know what I mean? I didn't want a brown sugar look. I wanted a, you know, bad boy ski mask sort of look. But ski mask wouldn't look good on live television. Okay. So, you know, this is the next best thing.
What a missed opportunity, D'Angelo. You should have gone with D'Angelo. Because you get both. You can come after me with D'Angelo. D'Angelo's versatile. We should incorporate D'Angelo into some of our R&B conversations that we'll have at the end of the show. D'Angelo, whatever you need. D'Angelo gives the game what it needs. You want to slow it down? D'Angelo. You want a surprise, a little unpredictable? D'Angelo. You just want to sit there and flex?
Not everybody can do that.
Multiple looks, multiple sounds. D'Angelo. Anyway, this is where I want to start. Talking about, you know, multiple sounds. And this is a case of multiple sounds, Vinny. When it comes to this NBA MVP conversation, it's multiple sounds. Sometimes I don't like what I'm hearing when people talk about MVPs. Okay, I'm gonna confess right here. Okay, here I am. In the whole MVP debate, I stand on the side. I generally stand on the side because it's not my number one thing. I'm not deeply invested in NBA MVP. And I'm just always curious that people are, that people have fights over this. I mean, people really get in debates, and we talk about it goes way off-roading. We talk about analytics. We talk about race. We talk about championships. How far has he gone? What's he ever done? Who's he ever carried? How many great players he have around him? Like, we have all these conversations off MVP when, you know, my thing is finals MVPs and championships. For example, I can tell you with a little bit of, you give me like 10 seconds or 15 seconds, you can name a year and I can tell you who won the championship that year. Now, going back a while, I'm very proud of this. I know champions. I got it in my head. I don't have to look it up. I got it in my head. If you ask me who won the MVP in 2010 or 11, I might have to pause. And I, you know what? I probably don't know. I don't retain regular season MVPs like I do finals MVPs and finals champs. I'm a team guy, Vinny, is what I'm trying to tell you.
You know what you are? You are a reason that we have this problem in the NBA where people say the regular season doesn't matter. Like, you are a main contributor. No, because you just said the regular season doesn't matter. I don't remember who won MVP. Yes, you said I can't remember.
I said I'm not as invested in an individual regular season award.
Okay. It all plays a part in telling a story. That's one way the NBA has gotten lost. That's one way that you have lost your way, Michael Holly. In 2010, the MVP was LeBron James. In 2011, the MVP was Derrick Rose. And you can name the champion and you can name the finals MVP. And sometimes one will directly lead to the other, even if they're not parallel. Now, to me, the MVP vote, of which I am an MVP voter. I've been that since 2010, is something that I do hold dear because it is a part of history. and I'm a historian, and I do take that, I do take the responsibility. I think that's what the word is, Michael Holly. It's a responsibility to have a vote.
It's a responsibility.
It's a responsibility.
Yes. Okay.
That's
all right.
That signifies history. And you don't control it. Like, the players win MVP. It's not, we gave it to someone. I hate the phrase, you know, we gave someone, yeah, we gave Karl Malone an MVP that he didn't deserve. But this is where the conversation goes off-roading. And that's a perfect example of your wording was perfect, off-roading. Because a lot of times it's less about performance and more about sensibilities and more about motives and more about people's own agendas, whether they believe it or not, or own biases, not necessarily racial bias, but just biases in general, how they consume basketball.
You're talking about voters' bias.
Yes.
The bias of the voters. So yes. Are you trying to tell me, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, I'm asking this. Mm-hmm. Is NBA voting and interpretation, is it as divided as American voting, the voting
no.
in the United States? It's not that torn where you have a group over here and a group over there, and we think we're looking at the same thing, but we have completely different interpretations of what it is. Like, some of the conversations I hear over MVPs just make me wonder, like, what are folks talking about? Do we have a voting problem? Is there a voting problem? You're mentioning biases and all that stuff. Do you think overall is a voting problem, or is it just people are different and we have, instead of a problem, we just have variety?
I think it's the latter. I think it's more variety. And I think because the NBA does not offer a definition on what most valuable player means, everybody is left to their own devices to come up with how that is actually defined to each individual voter. And because there's 100 voters, and there's beat writers, national reporters, broadcasters, international broadcasters and writers, I think you're going to find a pretty decent enough sample size. I think what has happened is there's been Twitter and the groupthink and the national conversation that we've all sort of been privy to that sort of almost feels like people are being bullied in one direction or the other. And then you yes. add in race.
Not almost, Vinny. But it ain't almost. It ain't almost. People are being bullied. People are being bullied because if you believe that somebody's the MVP, oh, shame on you for sharing your opinion about the MVP 2 weeks or 3 weeks before the votes are required to be in, because they will come at you. People will come at you for how you feel about great players. Natalie, put that list back up there again for the NBA MVP odds. If you put that up, there's not a scrub on this list. Nobody has to apologize for being on the list. The players don't have to apologize. And anybody voting for any one of those five people on the list, if you're listening on Sirius XM Channel 85, we've got Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic, Giannis, Jason Tatum, and Luka. Okay, I'm sorry. If I wanted to vote for Jason Tatum, even though his odds are like very distant at this point, I shouldn't have to apologize for it. And right. I don't need you to bully me because I think Jason Tatum is the MVP of the league. I probably have a pretty good argument for any of these guys on this list. What are we doing?
Well, I think if you go back to the Twitter era, and I've made this argument before, I haven't made it on this platform, since 2010, and I believe post-decision, because the decision of LeBron James was in the start of the Twitter era, right? You had 2013, where LeBron came one vote away from winning unanimously. You had 2016, where Stephen Curry won unanimously. You've had the last two or three years where Giannis and Nikola Jokic have won by pretty big margins. I feel like, especially when you add transparency in Michael Holly, where the votes are now public and people have to stand and defend their votes, which has, you know, sort of unintended consequences on both sides, but I generally believe it's a positive thing. Because there's Twitter and because people are having this discussion from November, we've been having a conversation about who's the MVP from November before players were really able to put a large enough sample size. And then you have the coaches like Michael Malone, who up until a couple days ago says, if anybody doesn't vote for Nikola Jokic, you know, how could you not do that? And then the other day he says, well, you know, the MVP conversation has gotten toxic. Guess who toxified the water, Coach? It was you.
Who?
Guess who else has toxified the water? Okay, here's the thing.
How he toxic?
You.
He toxified it by saying, if you don't vote for Nikola, I don't know what you're looking at.
If you don't vote for Nikola Jokic, it's almost like you don't know what you're watching in basketball. How can you vote for anybody else? And you just said it. Everybody else has their own sensibilities. And I think Jokic, if he wins, would be a formidable MVP. Similar with Joel Embiid, similar with Giannis, who I think is the best player in the game. But a lot of times the best player in the game doesn't win MVP. Similar to the way MVP has turned into a quarterback award, the NBA's MVP has kind of turned into a narrative award, a darling award. But the problem now is you're measuring it against history. You're measuring it against the possibility of Larry Bird won three in a row, and that's the last time that's happened. And before that, it was Wilt, and it was Bill Russell. Magic never won three in a row. Michael never won three in a row. LeBron won four out of five, but that one in between, the Derrick Rose MVP, is one of the most hotly contested MVPs that we've had in some time, in 2011, rather. So I do think when you add history into it, you add sensibilities into it, and because there's so much great play individually, along with, let's be perfectly honest here, guys can kind of manipulate their stats. And I don't say that in a nefarious way, but it's okay for guys to be ambitious and to know, hey, if I go and score 40 tonight, it's going to be a topic on SportsCenter. It's going to garner the attention of voters. Ooh. It's going to do something. I have no problem with ambition, but somehow it's become bastardized in a way. You know what I mean? Where you can gangster the numbers.
Oh,
remember, Russell Westbrook got an MVP because he averaged 31, 10, and 10 on a team that wasn't worth a damn, and because everybody was mad at Kevin Durant. Right?
Well,
right?
Well, they were worth a damn. I mean, what did they win, like 44 games or something like that?
They won like
45?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
All right,
exactly.
He led a team to the playoffs. He led a team to the playoffs, and he averaged a triple-double at that time. Now, I will say this. I was guilty. I remember having this conversation. Even at the time, like, wow, nobody's done
may
this
I
since
approach,
Oscar.
May I wait? And not, may I approach and, the witness? May I approach the witness like a hostile
come
witness
on,
for a second?
I'll confess everything. Yes, I'll confess everything.
No.
Go ahead.
I have a question. I will approach you with hostility but respect. Michael Holly, if Russell Westbrook averaged 31, 9 rebounds, and 9 assists, do you think that he would have been worthy of your imaginary MVP vote? 31-9-9 when he averaged 31-10-10.
I'm going to answer the question. It probably would have weakened his candidacy. He probably wouldn't have won it if he had been at 31-9-9. But, okay, that's a big if. And that sounds ridiculous when you say it out loud. Well, wait a minute. What's the difference between 31-9-9 and 31-10-10? It's a big difference because, historian, I'm going to turn it back on you. You're a historian of the game. So you know the last time that it happened was 1962. They didn't say, hey, Oscar averaged 31-9-9 in 62. It was doubles in three categories. And Oscar had come close in other seasons. But 62 was the one that we all paid attention to. So because Russell Westbrook touched it, he reached that level, Magic had come close. Even Fat Lever, shout out to Fat Lever, little guard out of Denver. He probably came close a couple of years. But Russell Westbrook did it. And that's why I got the MVP. We wouldn't make that mistake now, but we made the mistake. I'm speaking for the voters collectively as the royal we. We made the mistake when Westbrook won it. Let me ask you this, though. You said something really interesting back 5 minutes ago. And interesting thing since then, Benny. I'm not saying, you had a little deficit in interesting things. That got my attention. You said it's become a narrative award. So I want to, can I deputize you, Vincent Goodwill, as the one who's in control of all voters, and you're going to have a summit. You're going to get these voters together in a city that's convenient for many, somewhere in the middle of the country. Let's call it Chicago. We'll get together in Chicago and say to the voters, what are we doing? Are we really, have we lost our way? This is about narratives? Are we focused on narratives, or are we looking at MVPs in a way that would be that would make us as voters be proud to defend our position, to speak our positions, and people would say, okay, that makes a lot of sense, as opposed to a storyline? I mean, that's really scary. If you think it's become a narrative award, that's not what it's supposed to be.
Well, it's two sides of a quote-unquote narrative. The MVP is actually supposed to be reflective of how the season went. And storylines and narrative doesn't necessarily mean something completely bad, but we form the narrative. Like, we're controlling how these discussions are being had, and then we vote based off of the discussions that we create, as opposed to the players determining those things. So it is a bit self-aggrandizing from a media standpoint. I do sort of admit that. But the NBA, as I said at the start of the show, the NBA's regular season and the playoffs and the finals are supposed to tell a story, and it's all supposed to be woven together. So there is something positive about a narrative. But last year, the narrative for Nikola Jokic was he was playing on a lesser team, and he carried them to the playoffs, a sixth seed. You know what I mean? Think about it. And he won the MVP by a pretty wide margin over players who played on contending teams. The year before that, which I did give him my MVP vote, I gave him my MVP vote in that 21 season. I gave Giannis my MVP vote last season. The numbers was, man, this guy came out of nowhere. This team made it to the conference finals in the bubble last year, and they are balling. So there's a lot that goes into it. The Derrick Rose MVP was the MVP of, look at him leading the Bulls to 62 wins while LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh are struggling to win 55 in the Eastern Conference. So narratives aren't necessarily a negative thing, but it shouldn't be narrative driven. That shouldn't be the engine of the MVP award. It should just maybe steer it just a little bit.
Okay. I got two questions for you. Two quick ones.
Okay.
Who won the MVP in 2002?
In 2002, that was Tim Duncan.
In 2002? Did he really?
That was Tim Duncan.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
See, I knew who won the championship. I know who won the championship that year, but I didn't know who won the MVP. And
I can name every MVP from 1984 on, from post-merger.
You can. Oh my goodness. Like, now, finals, champions?
Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah,
I can go back to the 60s because, you know, I live in Boston. No. I am old, but that's not why I can do it, because I live in Boston, and I'm just associated with champions. So I just know champions. I just hang out with champions all the time. So the 60s, your answer is Boston. Pretty much, just say Boston with a couple of exceptions. Wilt jumped in there. He broke up the streak, and then the streak continued. So 60s is the Celtics and Wilt. Anyway, here's my other question for you. Who's your MVP this year? And I'm going to take a break and bring in Tom Haberstroh. Who's your MVP this year? You don't have to tell me why.
Don't quote me. I think Joel Embiid will win it. But I don't know if he has my vote. But I think Joel Embiid will win it.
Who's your vote?
I'm not sure yet.
Right now. 80%.
I'm not.
80. You're doing some research. It's a work in progress. But right now, it's a work in progress.
I am doing my research. I am like the idiots who are still waiting to take the COVID shot. I'm doing my research.
But at the top of your rough draft, who do you have at the top of your rough draft right now? We're not going to hold you to it, but right now, your number one spot is occupied by?
It might be Embiid right now. It might be.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Vinny. Thank you. I know you didn't want to disclose that information a little too early. I know that. Don't add them, y'all. It's a work in progress. You heard him. It's a work in progress. Tom Haberstroh's next.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
What is the level of crisis here, Tom? Because you're the nation's authority on actually knowing how these referees are graded. You have expertise here.
Yeah, I just got a text from an executive who said the officiating has been embarrassing all season, that this is not an anomaly. What we saw last night where Josh Hart is calling out the officials on a Jimmy Butler non-call. You had Luka Doncic, one of the biggest stars in the world. Like, he's doing a money sign, a money gesture at an official on national TV in a game. Mark Cuban is protesting or filing a protest on a game because of a botched call or miscommunication in the third quarter. And then you had an official who's been in the spotlight over the past couple of weeks because of the Fred VanVleet thing, the rant. That official had to admit to a blown call at the buzzer with two teams that are fighting for playoff position. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Like, we had Anthony Davis earlier this season saying the Lakers were getting cheated out of games because of the officiating, one of the biggest stars in the NBA. So this is not like what happened last night. To me, feels like an officiating Armageddon where every game it seemed like things were going awry. But if you talk to executives and players and coaches, like, this has been going on all season, and they're the trust that these players and teams and coaches and executives have with officiating, I think it's as low as it's been since I've been covering the league.
Whoa, big statement right there. Big statement right there from Tom Haberstroh. He is here along with Vinny Goodwill. And I know, Vinny, you put in your feed enough about the officials, and I say more on the officials. We need more conversations on it. So Haberstroh, you know, looking at these situations that have happened, you outlined them beautifully there. Where do we go from here? It does seem like we're in crisis.
Well, we have to figure out something because we're not even into the playoffs right now. We're not in the playoffs, and that's when everything gets elevated and scrutinized, and it goes to times 10. So any sort of mini controversy is going to lead the A block, B block, and C block of the sports shows. Right now, the NBA is still playing second fiddle to March Madness, and still the officiating is a huge story. It's a tough thing because we've done this in the past, as Vinny knows, where the players will meet with the referee union or leaders of the referees and the NBA and have this meeting, the powers that be, come together and break bread. I don't think that works either. I think players are feeling, and Trae Young talked about this recently, other players have talked about it, is that the referees hold power over the players in terms of being able to throw them out or give them technicals, take money out of their pockets, and yet players don't have that same sort of power over the officials. And I don't think that the players are absolved of any blame in this. What Luka Doncic did and got fined $35,000, that fine just came down today. I thought what he did was way over the line, and it's something that I'm surprised the league didn't come down harsher on. A $35,000 fine for a guy making $30-40 million, I don't think is going to change his behavior much. So I think there's got to be, from all sides, all stakeholders need to come together and figure out how to make this a non-story. I don't know how you do it, because the players are feeling very aggrieved and they're voicing those concerns. And I think the NBA has kept a tight lid on how they do officiating and how they grade officials. They don't release those reports on missed calls and correct calls. We just have to trust them. And I think maybe more transparency is needed here.
Yeah. What do you think, Vinny?
Well, they do release the 2-minute reports, which, you know, I know everybody sort of feels like it's, you know, crying over spilled milk. But, Tom, I'm very, very curious. Do you believe that, A, that this will continue, or B, or not necessarily say this will continue, just I'll spin it forward in a better way. Do you think that the officiating, for those who don't know, the league will bring in – Monty McCutcheon, who's the head of officiating, he will come to different arenas throughout the preseason. He'll sit with players and with the media and go over points of emphasis so that we can better disseminate how these games are being called in real time, especially with Twitter. Like, I've had many meetings with the officials, especially on what's a flagrant foul, what isn't. But Tom, do you believe that this will be so costly that it will cost someone a playoff series? Because Tom, I didn't feel like what happened in Dallas the other day, I didn't feel like that was on the refs. I felt like that was on Dallas. If you felt like Me that too. Was your ball, you should yep. be on your end ready to inbound it. Since when do you inbound the ball on the other side of the floor, even if it is your ball? So I felt like that was a slip up on Dallas's part, not the officials.
I think it's both. If you remember in that clip, Michael Smith, who is the second official in that game, was on the other side of the floor, the wrong side of the floor with the Dallas Mavericks. And you can see Jason Kidd talking to him off on the mic, hot mic, being like, hey, you told us it was our ball. Now, Amin Alhassan on the show on Lebatard yesterday, he made the good point of, if it's your ball, why aren't you on the other side of the floor where the ball went out of bounds and taking it out there? So there was a mass right. confusion, lack of communication that the umpire official in that game didn't have the presence of mind and the authority to say, like, hey, hold up, Michael, ball's over here. I'm about to inbound the ball, but Dallas, Michael, my officials aren't in the right spot. Hey, let's get everyone settled up and let's play ball. But let's not make mistake this about this, that Jordan Poole was the smartest one of this whole bunch. He grabbed that ball out of Annie Nagy's hands and was like, yeah, it's our ball. We're going to get this bucket right here. That's a veteran move by Jordan Poole. He's always looking for the bucket. But I will say this, to your question, Vinny, about going forward and the communication amongst Monty McCutcheon, who's running the officials, and the players and the teams. I think for teams, they look back at earlier this season. If you remember the travel ban that happened in the regular season, out of nowhere, seemingly referees were enforcing travels at 3, 4, 5 times the normal rate, and then it was gone. That wasn't a point of emphasis before the season. It just came out of nowhere, and teams were like, what is this all about? You're going to start implementing certain rules at certain times. We got to know about that. And so for them, a lot of it is communication, just like what happened with the Mavs. The Dallas Mavericks weren't right in the communication department. Neither were the officials, and the Warriors are just going to take advantage of that. I don't think the blood is only on the officials' hands here. I want to be clear about that. But I do think that when they are changing the rules and enforcing rules differently as the season goes on, I think that speaks to a lack of communication, a lack of trust, and the communication just has to be better all around.
That's what it is. I want to get both of you on this, because I want to make it clear. I'm not even going to talk about, oh, how did you call that? I'm not going to talk about some of my pet peeves, officiating pet peeves. But let me just give you one of them. One of them is, I'll tell you one, because I don't want to hijack my own argument talking about my pet peeves. But it is usually when something is happening right under the basket and there's an official on top of it and a call comes from 45 feet away, that drives me crazy. Yep. Like, dog, you didn't see it? What are you doing blowing a whistle? You just want to be involved. Swallow the whistle. You didn't see what happened. And the guy right here under the basket didn't call a damn thing. Stay out of it. Stop doing too much. But I don't want to, that's not really what bothers me about officiating. I think Fred VanVleet was on the money. He talked about the spirit. He talked about the psychology. He was like, some guys come in there, some guys just decide he's going to be the a-hole that day. You can't say nothing to him. You go talk to him. He's ready. He's already triggered. He's ready to tee you up. I think that's the problem with a lot of officiating. We understand it's a tough job. We know what the game is fast. We know these guys are bigger and stronger and faster than they've ever been before. And that when you walk into every arena, nobody is happy to see you. We got it. But you gotta accept that that's your job. You know, like you're dealing with emotional people in the stands and on the court. And when you bring that chip to the game, it really ruins the game. I think that's what VanVleet was saying. I agree with him 100%.
I want to jump in here real quick and make note of something that's happened the last couple of years that is different than in years past. That 5 years ago, it wasn't a part of the conversation, or 10 years ago. The betting culture right now has made it so much more difficult to keep your emotions in check as an official and as a player and as a coach. When every wrong decision you make, or miss shot, or layup bunny that you miss off the front iron, it becomes World War III to a lot of the fans in the arena and are yelling at you, hey, I can't pay mortgage now because of that blown call. Hey, my kid's not going to get a Christmas present right now because of a blown call. And I'm being nice when I say those things, right? It's a lot worse than what I'm saying right there. And people are saying, hey, betting's always been there. What are you talking about? People have been gambling since the dawn of sports. The difference is now that it's legal, fans don't have to be afraid about yelling and, you know, saying these things on the record at these games. Now that it's legal in some of these states, they can go and talk all they want about their bets. And so before, you might be quiet. You might not want to be public about the fact you got money on this game. You got scratch on this game. Now, as Kyrie Irving did talk about it on one of his IG lives, the betting atmosphere, or the betting conversation being infused into the games, has everybody on edge, and that includes the players, not just the officials.
It's funny, Tom, and I think the last point before I move, because I want to hit something else with you. I do think that the wide ages, because the officials have gotten younger, like a lot of older officials that we've come to know by name and by face, they've retired, they've aged out. And you have a lot of younger refs who are trying to establish themselves. You have older players hanging around longer. So there's different sensibilities for each official and each player and each relationship there. I think that's an unknown sort of factor that's really, really hard to nail down as far as scientific evidence when it comes down to individual sensibilities. But Tom, we are in award season. I'm not sure if you know that. We are in award season where bonuses and supermax and rookie scale contracts, everything else. The best way that the CBA, the players and the owners decided it could be decided would be from the media. A, do you have a vote? Because I don't know if you got an email like I did recently about, do you want to vote? Do you believe that the media and their votes should determine bonuses on supermax contracts and rookie scale super extensions? Because a guy like Ja Morant has $40 million on the line this year and this year alone, if he makes an all-NBA team, especially with everything he's got going on.
I think it should go by way of the all-star voting, where it's a mix. It's a composite of different parties involved going into that vote. Because I do agree that having journalists being responsible for $40 million in some cases, more than that in other cases. I remember Brian Windhorst, my guy from ESPN, he explained a few years ago when Anthony Davis was up for one of these, and he was going to get like a $25 million bonus depending on if he made all NBA or what have you. And he made the point that if the 80 or so voters received a nice gift of a car from Anthony Davis, Anthony Davis would still profit off of giving every media voter a car to vote his way and greasing the wheels that way. Now, of course, Anthony Davis might not do that, but the point is made is that when you have incentives on the line, people are going to react. Economics 101 is you are going to react depending on the incentives. And for NBA players, I mean, it gets really dicey. And I remember Mark Spears, he just wrote about this, Hall of Famer Mark Spears, by the way. He said he doesn't want to do a vote because journalists shouldn't have to vote a certain way to earn access to certain players. And he told the story of a player not wanting to give an interview to a reporter who was requesting one because that reporter left him third or off a ballot. And that, to me, that's not good for the sport. I like the idea of media who cover every game and watch as many games as anybody on the planet being responsible for MVP. But I will say, I think it could be good to have some checks and balances in here, whether it's players, whether it's coaches, what have you, to be a panel in assessing the all NBA awards rather than just one party being responsible for it.
Yeah, that's a good point. We had Spears on yesterday, and he told that story here as well. Like, he's really uncomfortable with the voting because how it affects players. You think, oh, you just want to go talk to a guy. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Where do you stand before the interview starts? Did you vote for me? Did you vote for me?
Oh, they don't ask you. Did you vote for me? They don't ask.
They know.
They already know.
They know. They know.
They already know.
You were one of the nine. I had a guy tell me recently, you were one of the nine.
So no interview then? Since you were one of the nine, you're out?
No, I was one of the nine that did vote for this guy. So he was like,
oh, that did.
So you that were, did.
You were in the divine nine then. The divine nine.
There we go.
Let me ask you this. Habitstrow, before we let you go. I know it's a dangerous question after all the things we just said, but I'm going to ask you. MVP, rough draft, just like I asked Vinny. Rough draft right now. You don't have to submit the vote, but as you're working on it, if you had to submit it today, who would you vote for?
Man, if you asked me this question a month ago, I would say Jokic in a landslide. But the way that Joel Embiid has played, I've got it neck and neck. It's about a tie. And I think the only tiebreaker I have here, it's not a matter of performance or per minute numbers or advanced stats or looking at the standings. To me, Jokic has just been on the floor more than Joel Embiid. And so if there's a tiebreaker, it's just that he's been more available than both Giannis and Joel Embiid. So for me, it's probably a tie, and maybe a tiebreaker goes to Jokic. But you know what's great? We still got a couple more weeks left in the season, and so I won't have to put this in ink. It's still in pencil.
Just like I said with Vinny, don't add him, y'all. We're just trying to have a conversation. Can we have a conversation without people being screamed at, having their integrity questioned, saying without the Luka thing here?
Now, I just got to figure out if I'm going to be one of nine on someone, which athlete do I want to be one of nine on? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
That is good. Where do you want to be? Like, one of nine. That's a good company to keep. To be one of nine and athletes say thank you. Come on, sit right here. How much time you got?
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Mike Jones, great NFL writer, columnist, thinker, scholar, has this headline: with Lamar Jackson, NFL owners show is control they care about the most. And let the church say amen and amen again. As a matter of fact, the sermon is just getting started there. Mike Jones joins us. And Mike, I think the three of us agree on that. But let's drill down some more on that. They care about control more than anything, because what leads you to that conclusion?
Well, you know, if it's all about winning, then you would definitely do what you got to do to make sure that you can acquire or retain one of the most talented quarterbacks in the league. We've seen them do all kinds of things in the name of winning. They'll look the other way. When a player's got baggage, they will, pay somebody. They'll do all kinds of things if it puts them in a better position to win. But here they are with an opportunity, either the Ravens to re-sign Lamar Jackson to a long-term extension, or other teams to jump in and start bidding for him. And nobody's doing it because they don't want to continue what the Browns started with these huge fully guaranteed deals like Deshaun Watson got. And so because of that, there's a lot of people that believe, and it's hard to argue with them, that there's a wink nod agreement. Hey, we're not doing this anymore. Nobody jump in on this, because we are not going to continue to reset the market after what the Browns did.
Now, I get that we've been talking about Lamar Jackson for pretty much like the past 3 months ad nauseum. And it seems like this has come to an obvious point of where we are now, where there's the non-exclusive franchise tag. And it seems like there's this sort of, you know, we can just call it collusion, it looks like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How do you think this ends? Do you think this ends with Lamar Jackson coming to camp, playing on a non-exclusive tag, sitting out? Or do you think that there's a team that bucks the trend? Because my feeling, Mike, is after Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow's got to get paid. And there's going to be more quarterbacks who are going to get paid. This cycle is not going to stop. It's going to continue with someone else. How does this end with him?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because, you know, I could see a scenario where he decides, okay, fine, I'm going to play out the tag here and then see what happens next year. We saw Kirk Cousins do that in Washington, 2016, 2017, where he played on back-to-back years with the tag. Then he went to Minnesota on a fully guaranteed deal. But it depends on where the feelings are here. How upset is Lamar with the way things are played out? Because he could say, hey, I'm not going to report. And then maybe there are some conversations where someone says, hey, look, we're not going to give you a fully guaranteed deal, but we're going to give you this amount. Or maybe they do go ahead and say, hey, we're not going to go a $250 million deal to top Deshaun Watson, but we'll give you a shorter deal where we'll give you 3 years, $144 million, get you at $45, $48 million a year, and then you'll be able to hit free agency again. Maybe that appeals to him, and then someone will go ahead and pull the trigger on a deal. It's hard to say because he doesn't have an agent. So this thing isn't playing out as conventionally as maybe we would see it there. But for right now, looks like Lamar is being, you know, the shrewd businessman, sticking to what he feels like he's worth. And so far, nobody is biting. But that doesn't mean that eventually they won't.
You know, it's so funny. I mentioned this yesterday, Vinny and Mike. And that Tom Pelissero tweet is just part of the whole patchwork that happens with the NFL. It's not just a business. It is a multi-billion dollar operation. It's a system. And Lamar Jackson and anybody on his team, when you're going against City Hall, the State House, the White House, when you're going against the government, you better have your stuff in order. And so I'm on Lamar's side, but he's just unprepared to deal with this apparatus that the NFL is. They're dirty, man. They're dirty. Right. They do all kinds of dirty-ish to make the point. And so now they put out this memo, which is funny. They didn't mean it to be funny. The memo's funny. Hey, I just want to, you know, tell you teams, don't negotiate with this guy because he's not a certified agent. No, that ain't what you're trying to say. What you're trying to say is, we're colluding, and here it is, we're colluding. Don't talk to them. They're the enemy. We're doing it under the guise of, he's not a certified agent. They don't give a damn if this guy is certified or not. What they want to happen is what's happening. And I wonder, Mike and Vinny, just weigh in on this. I wonder if Lamar was he ready for this? Did he know that they would play? They ain't playing no fair fight.
Right, right. I don't think he was, because, you know, talking to someone heading into last season, they felt like his stance was, look, if I want to be here, but if Baltimore doesn't want to pay me, somebody's going to pick up the phone and want me. You know, there's going to be teams that come after me. I think he was not expecting that, like you said, there would be this dirty game where they all get together, you know, in their billionaire, you know, clubs where they hang out and say, hey, we ain't going to do this. And it doesn't matter how badly you need a quarterback. We've got to hold the line because, like you said, Vinny, Joe Burrow's coming. Justin Herbert's coming. Jalen Hurts is coming. And if they keep on resetting the market, it's bad for their business. And Steve Bisciotti was outspoken about this when Deshaun Watson got his. So he definitely doesn't want to be the guy that winds up opening the floodgates?
Well, I tend to think a little bit differently. I think Lamar has more cars than people give him credit for. Like, for him to go to Louisville and for him to play the way that he played, to put the fire under Bobby Petrino's feet and to wind up being the quarterback that he became there, I think he's a little more shrewd than people are giving him credit for. And I do wonder if it's going to, I do believe it's more so going to play out in his favor more than people believe. But Mike, my question, I want to spin it forward. The draft is a few weeks away, and we know that the Carolina Panthers made the trade to get up to number one. And you've been hearing Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, Richardson. Is all of these questions obscuring the fact that Bryce Young should be the number one pick and we're just rearranging some deck chairs? Or are there real questions that maybe it's my Michigan sensibilities and I saw CJ Stroud, not come up big against Michigan a couple times. Yeah. You see that score behind me that says 45-26.
I see the score. Now,
But by and large, are we just missing the boat that Bryce Young should be the number one pick and people are just overthinking themselves?
No, I mean, I think it depends on who you talk to. Everybody's got a different flavor. There are some people who do believe that Bryce Young could be the number one pick and deserves to be the number one pick. But then, everybody evaluates talent differently. And it does seem like there is interest there on Carolina's part with CJ Stroud. And there are a number of draft analysts, guys who are in the inside or evaluating talent who feel like, oh, maybe Stroud is the guy. Size is a thing. We're hearing a lot about Bryce Young's size. And, then you wonder about durability and everything. From everybody I've talked to, they said, hey, look, I don't think the size is going to be an issue. Yes, he's got to be with the creative coach who's going to move him outside the pocket and things like that. But they feel like, hey, this guy's got the ability, even though he's not the biggest guy. So we'll see. There's a lot of, smoke screens and things like that. We call this lying season because just because somebody says something doesn't mean that's what they're actually going to do. It's going to be intriguing to see which one of those two it is. So.
I wonder what you think of I call it the theater of it all with pro days. I mean, you saw CJ Stroud and everybody is there from Carolina. He's hugging up Frank Reich, and then McCown is there. You see Jim Caldwell, like a lot of hugs. And hey, man, good to see you. I mean, first of all, it doesn't really mean anything, does it? I mean, the pro day, I know we talk a lot about the pro day. Hey, here we go. Here's live coverage of Bryce Young's pro day. Live coverage of CJ Stroud's pro day. I saw him play, not just against Michigan. I saw him play against Georgia. I saw him make throws that weren't against the air. And there were defenders there. There was a crowd and game situation. Really, isn't this just like a nice trip for scouts and coaches? What are you really gleaning from a guy's pro day?
You think somebody making a nice trip to Tuscaloosa, Alabama?
They just hanging. It's just out of the office, Vinny. It's a trip out of the office. You hanging with your boys. Mike, what are you learning here?
I mean, it's one of those things that they do because it's been done for so long and they want to just double check. But the thing is, yes, you're exactly right. They have all the body of work. They've got all the game film. They've got all the footage. But it's just, okay, another high-pressure situation. Let's see how he does when all the attention's on him. Yes, he's in shorts and T-shirts. There's no big 300-pound lineman crashing in on him. But again, it's just, okay, we think that we know what we see. Let's just see it one more time. Let's see how the guy is when we interact with him, we go to dinner with him and all that. It's just all part of the, like you said, the theater, the dating game that the whole lead up to the NFL draft is.
Now, you just said it, dating game. So think dating game in your mind. And I'm younger than both of y'all. And this is going to upset our producer, Natalie, but
you don't know that.
I'm quite sure I'm younger than both of you. I'm absolutely quite sure. And this will let me know. This will certainly let me know Mike Jones' sensibilities. Because we're going to talk about this next segment before we go. Mike Jones, got this great question for you. I need the most honest answer that you could give. If you're a single man and you're going on a date and you riding out with a young lady in the car, you listening to Jodeci, or Boyz II Men?
Oh, definitely Boyz II Men. What are we doing?
Hey.
What are we doing? I mean, do you need me to start singing like which Boyz II Men song we're going to be listening to? I mean, what are you doing? Is that a trick question? What? I don't understand. I thought this was going to be a hard question you're about to hit me with.
That is peak light skin. That's what that is. That is peak light skin of you.
See, you're just like, oh my God. You're just like the voters and the fans. Hey, somebody tells you something you don't want to hear. Now you got to insult them. Now his name calling. Now why? Why? Just because he disagreed with you.
Michael Holly, you agree?
Actually, do. I agree with you, Mike.
Yeah.
I thought about this. Now, real quick, Mike, before we go, because I'll tell Vinny on the other side what my logic is. But why do you say Boyz II Men over Jodeci?
I mean, you're trying to set the mood, right?
Okay. Say no more.
I mean,
say no more. Well said.
Did I start singing right now?
What song you setting the mood with Boyz II Men? End of the Road? That's what you said in the mood?
It's so hard to say goodbye. Like you want me to. And I'll hold you tight.
I mean, what are we doing?
Don't sing it.
What are we doing?
What are we doing? Now, Mike, you are a brilliant reporter. I really love the way I love your writing, all this stuff. Don't do that. Don't do that, Mike. Mike,
our poor
don't
guy
do
didn't
that.
Know the words, so I had to help him out.
Hey. The words ain't the problem, Mike. It's the singing. But I love you, man.
Both.
I love you.
It's both.
Enjoy your weekend.
It's both. See you guys. It's all of it.
Good selection, though. I like your selection. Vinny, it makes sense. And I'll explain it to you. I'll explain it to you in a couple minutes.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, NCAA tournament, man. This is a fun time of the year, Vinny. Kansas State. Man, they were making some plays last night. A brother with 19 assists, arguing with the coach, and throwing an oop for a dunk. They beat Michigan State, going to the Elite Eight. Gonzaga, great game against UCLA. Florida Atlantic, number 9 seed, winning and advancing. How you feel about Michigan State? I know you were rooting for them last night. How you feel about this game?
I really wasn't, because I'm not a Michigan State fan, but because of everything that's happened, I decided to make myself an honorary Spartan. I got goddaughters and, you know, family kids and stuff like that go there. And they couldn't even get a shot off. Can you get a shot off? Can you not clam up at the last second? It was poor spacing.
You let my
man Marquise style on you. Like, they got clowned in Madison Square Garden from a kid from Harlem. That's what they get.
Michigan State, I didn't think would even make
get
it.
Get a shot
far.
Off.
What were they, like 10 seed, something like that?
They were 17.
Oh, they're 17. Okay. I didn't think they'd make it this far. They won a couple of games in the NCAA tournament. They lose. They don't advance to the Elite Eight. It's all right. It's all right. Now, let me ask you this. I don't want to talk about Michigan State anymore or the NCAA tournament. I want to talk about your slander of Boyz II Men. What the hell's going on, man? Like, this has become a campaign now. Where you're talking about Jodeci over Boyz II Men. It's not that close. It's like NBA, bring it full circle. It's like NBA MVP voting. It depends on what you're looking for. What are you looking for? And
this is not my war against Jagged Edge. Okay. This is not my war against Jagged Edge and that terrible song. Let's keep it completely honest here. But Boyz II Men is almost like, if you take New Edition minus like some flavor and minus Bobby Brown, you got Boyz II Men.
Ooh. Hey, you know, Boyz II Men are, so how about production? I mean, not musical production, but How about awards? Let's put it that way. How about the hardware? Does the hardware matter to you? Does number one hits matter to you?
No, no.
Hollywood Walk of Fame, all that stuff? No? Because
it's about what I'm trying to listen to. It's about what I'm trying to listen to.
Okay,
and I'd much rather throw on Jodeci's Come and Talk to Me or Stay or Fiendin'. Or if you want to get all into your feelings, I'll turn on Jodeci's Love You for Life. And Boyz II Men don't have a song that comes close to that.
Boyz II Men, I think Boyz II Men is more of, it's just completely, you're asking, it's like comparing a five and a one. I mean, they just do different things. Boyz II Men is great love music. It really is. And it's great melody.
Yeah, love
harmony.
Without soul. Where's the soul? Where's the soul? Where's the feeling?
Okay.
Where's the funk?
But Jodeci,
where's it
Jodeci
at?
Giving you... That's the new Jack Swing and all that stuff. That was Jodeci's thing and hip hop and R&B.
Yep.
Boyz
II
Men wasn't trying to do that. That's all
Ask
right.
Ask the women. Better music.
You get it. Well, one woman says Boyz II Men. You didn't want to hear that.
She don't count. She don't count.
Oh.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.